Session number 10196, Reel 2.
Mary Cunningham, Reel 2. May we continue discussing your training?
Sure. Thinking about it, we must have had, before ever we went up, some lectures on theory of flight. Because I didn't think many of us had ever been in the air before. And then one was assigned to an instructor who would take you up for about half-hour flips and first one would be explaining what the controls were, and then letting you try. And so you progressed. You did a few. I don't think you did any aerobatics until after you'd soloed. It was basically just getting it up and getting it down. And we must have learnt theory of. We did theory of flight, and then we did a few lectures on an engine, navigation. Weather.
How difficult did you find it or not?
I suppose it was challenging. I don't think I ever thought I couldn't do it. But it wasn't all that simple. The actual flying, I thought, was an absolute, it was marvellous. I picked it up very quickly and my instructor was very excited. He said, "Oh, this is marvellous, you'll solo within 5 hours." And then we got to about 8 or 9, he was saying, "Well, it's just as well to take your time." Because having picked it up, I didn't consolidate, which is one of those things. But however, I did manage to do it in the end. Just, I think, 11 and a half. Just made it. And one of the things was that we went in batches of four, and only two would be able to pass through. So we knew that only two would be accepted. And two would fail. But luckily, Monique and I both passed. But I'm sure it was due to Captain Smith, who thought that nurses were wonderful. And so he used to take us up on, when he used to do weather checks, which weren't counted against us in our logbooks as ours, he used to go up with Captain Smith and he would let us fly. But he was a super person.
What
very nice.
What happened to the girls that failed? Could they try again?
Well, no. You then went onto the Labour Exchange and you had a job. I don't think anybody who failed was kept on in any capacity at all. There might have been the odd person who was a driver, but I don't think so. Because they had such an enormous people wanted to do it, a number of people wanted to do it, and it was for free and we were paid. I mean, we were taught to fly and paid to learn. And it was very exciting, so.
How did you feel the first time you soloed? Did you feel
I was so excited, but the next morning to do it again. Oh. But your instructor takes you up and I suppose it happens now, and you're doing your usual thing, and he then gets out and says, "Off you go." And you're too excited to think about anything else. You're sort of done. But the next morning you've had a whole night to think about it. And you're soloing, and that's when you start thinking. But it was good. It was very exciting.
So how long did that period of training last?
That was from October probably till April or something like that. 6 months, I think. My logbook will tell you, and I can't. Haven't got it. And then one had to do with the whole system of the ATA was you went to various classes, and class one was the light aeroplanes. You could fly a Tiger Moth, Magister, Puss Moth, Fairchild, and you had to do 50 hours on that type before you could go for your next class. But before you could be sent to a ferry pool as a class one pilot, you had to do 70 hours as a taxi pilot, which meant the Fairchild was taken to collect people from various spots where they'd taken the aeroplanes, but always the senior pilot then took over. So you would take the aeroplane and then the senior pilot would fly it. So we had to do 70 hours of that, which took quite a long... Actually, we managed to do it in a month because it happened to be a marvellous May, and Monique and I both went to White Walsham, and we were always trying to get flights, and we did get our time. And so then...
Where were you taking aircraft to?
Well, White Walsham pilots would take them... I mean, we'd go probably as far north as Glasgow, and then the ferry pools in Scotland would take over. Or we could go west. Or the ferry, if we went too far west, then the ferry pool in Bristol might have to take it over. But it varied. I mean, you might take an... once one got onto Class 2, which was all singles, you might take a Spitfire from Eastleigh, which was by us, to Calais and, say, Bath, and then the Mustang on to... somewhere on the East Coast, and then something else on to Harden, and then there might be an airplane to bring back again. But if there were not, that's a long trip, so it would, an Oxford would be used as a taxi airplane. But if it were, if you finished up, say, in Oxford somewhere, a Fairchild would come and pick you up and take you back to your pool, your ferry pool.
And were you still receiving any sort of instruction in this period?
Not in that period, no. When I went back to convert on from Class 1 to Class 2, went into the TAME, and we did a certain amount of time, and I can't remember how many hours, on a Harvard.
Was this after you'd been sent to a ferry pool?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. We went to... We did the taxi work at... I did at White Walsham.
How many hours a week do you think you'd
average? How many flew a week? I don't know, my logbook would tell me, but I haven't got it. In all, over the 2 years, I did 500. But I suppose not an awful lot, because the flights weren't necessarily very long. If you took a Spitfire from Eastleigh to Calais, probably...
How often were you tested before you were sent to your pool?
I suppose you soloed, and then there must have been from... Oh, we flew the Proctor from Barton. We then had a time at TAME where we flew a Proctor. So I remember we checked out from that. And then you had ground exams. I don't know. I mean, I can't remember.
Do you remember
if
the
was...
exams were fairly rigorous?
It was nasty. Not to my liking. I learnt things by heart.
What percentage of girls failed, do you think?
I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Whether some failed on the written work and having passed the flying, maybe. I don't know that at all.
What did you find the most difficult aspect of doing this?
Engines. I know nothing about them. Learning about engines... I didn't really see why it was necessary, I suppose. And all I can remember is the four-stroke cycle was suck, squeeze, bang, push, which is about all my memory. Now, I'm not naturally mechanical, so I didn't see that as a much more active person than a learned person, studious, so... I thought that was, the weather got a bit, learning about Met was a bit sort of involved, I thought. All of it was a waste of time. I wanted to get in there, wanted to do things. But you had to, I mean, obviously it was necessary.
What did you consider the main hazards, really?
Well, I think the barrage balloons, they had, Worthy Down, they had one. Cardington, they had. At Bedfordshire, they had an enormous barrage. And they had one near us at Hamble. And, you know, you had to avoid them. They could be a hazard. But, I mean, German airplanes weren't around. I mean, they were... I think earlier people probably had problems, but we didn't.
You were telling me something about a buzz bomb.
Well, yes, that was just... I was flying in a Fairchild and it overtook me, but I mean, it was about 200 or 300 feet above. The night you would do.
How do you feel about that?
Well, nothing. It's too late. It had passed me. I was going much faster than I was. Yeah, surprise. But not much. I think you do about it. Just hoped it didn't sort of land on somebody. But I think they must have been awful. We've missed all that because we were down in Southampton, Hamble.
So after 70 hours, you were posted to your first pool. Mm. Did you have any choice of location?
I think so. Well, I mean, there were two all-women pools. There was Hamble or Cosford. And Hamble sounded much nicer than Cosford. So we most of us applied to go to Hamble.
Why did you opt for an all-women pool?
I don't think we had a lot of choice. The women, there were about, there were only about two other pools which had women and men. One was Sherburn in Elmet, I think. And White Walsham had women, but they were very senior. We were very, very junior. And I think our choice was Hamble or Cosford. I didn't think we were... Ratcliffe might have had about four women. But in the main, the women went to women's pools, which in lots of ways was great fun. It was much nicer.
Could you describe to me the pool?
The pool, well, it was on the airfield, normal thing. The mess was, perhaps it wasn't Nissen Huts, perhaps it was a bit better, but it was pretty basic. A room, sort of lounge where we all waited for our flights, played cards or did whatever we did. And then there was another place where sort of cafeteria, dining room. And then we all found our own billets. There wasn't any messing, but most of us found little cottages. And in Basildon, old Basildon, we had our cottage, the old cottage. And then there was another one, I can't remember what it was called, about three girls. And then the Dolphin was another one with about four girls. And for that, we relied our petrol to and from. By this time, one had a car. And they relied petrol to and from the airfield, which is about 9 gallons a month, I think. 9 miles. I'm not talking about 9 gallons. Wasn't this about 9 gallons a month? But it was great fun. I mean, actually, the cottage we had belonged to a solicitor who lived in London, or a stockbroker, I think. And he wasn't going to let it to us because he said young girls like that, they can't have my house. So my mother went to see him in the city, and she took the cottage, and we rented it from her. So she was responsible for it. But it was a lovely old cottage. Great fun. I mean, none of us knew anything about cooking or messing. Dear Monique, we didn't eat breakfast. And so Monique, like idiot, within six of us, said, oh, well, I like breakfast. So we said, all right, Monique, if you're cooking breakfast, why not cook for all of us? And so she cooked breakfast for us all. But we used to take it in turns, doing the cooking and doing the shopping. And it was great, great fun. And so one used to go down to the airfield every morning.
Could you describe for me?
A typical
perhaps
day.
Typical, yes.
A typical day. It's very difficult to find. Well, you got down to the airfield, and then you got your chits telling you what was the programme for the day.
Who did you report to in the airfield?
The adjutant. A woman called Alison. And so then you were given your chits, and then you go to the Met. Look, see what the weather was going to do, because it might be beautifully sunny in Hamble and thick fog or whatever where you're planning to go, or vice versa. It might be dull at Hamble and it would clear. So you go to the Met and see if you could fly. And your chits had various priorities. If you had a priority one, it meant it was very important that the airplane was delivered to a squadron or somewhere. It was wanted. A P2 wasn't so important, a P3, you know, if the weather was bad, tomorrow would do. So depending on, obviously the more junior you were, the less vital was your chit. The senior ones had the... priority ones. I think one did occasionally have it. There was something, no one else to take it, sort of thing. So you would decide. You could authorise your own flight. I mean, you could either say, I'm off, or I don't like the look of it, and I'm not off.
What did you do if you didn't?
Sat around and play cards. We spent the day in case the weather cleared. And also in case something came through suddenly and had, that's when one probably got a priority one, is if something came through which and there was no one to take it and you had to take it.
Did you have many priority ones?
I can't remember. I don't think I did. I don't think I did. I was very junior. Because our ranks were, we went in as cadets, and then once one soloed and was class one, one became a third officer. Then the theory was that when you went to class two, you'd be a second officer, and class three, a first officer, what it was. But every time we moved into, we up to class, so they did away with the rank. So we never actually became anything but third officers. We always stayed as third officers. Didn't matter how far we went up. In fact,
how did you move up, actually?
I got as far as class three, which was class one, you had to do 50 hours ferrying on a class one type aeroplane. Then you went to your conversion, which was the Harvard and the Spit. And then you could fly any single engine aeroplane, but you had to have 50 hours on class two types before you could go and do a conversion onto light twins. And then you have to have 50 hours ferrying light twins, which in the mean, as well as you'd be flying class two and class one. So it wasn't just 50 hours, it was 50 hours on the type. And then you'd go back to the next conversion, which was fast twins. And then the final one was four engine. But I didn't get past class three, which was the light twins. So, and the war ended. We used to fly for 10 days and then have 3 days off. I think that's how we worked it. I mean, it wasn't anything to do. I mean, weekends were immaterial because, I mean, there weren't such things, because if an aeroplane was needed, it was needed. So it was 10 days on and three off.
Well, where did you do your conversion courses?
At White Waltham or TAME. TAME was for the Harvard and Spit, and White Waltham was when we did the Oxford and Anson's.
What do you remember about them? Who was teaching you?
Can't remember. I can't remember.
Were they mostly practical courses, or?
Yes, they were by then, because the ab initio training involved all the Met and the navigation. And I'm sure when we went on to different types, when we went to converting to the from light singles to fast singles, we must have done something about engines. But navigation was the same, only faster. Weather was the same, and it came sooner. I mean, that was all. Those basic things were. But it was just different engines. I think we must have done that. I think we must have done. I can't remember.
And how difficult was it to get through those courses?
I don't think it was. You had to concentrate, and one was terribly keen to do it.
Did most girls get through?
Yes, I think so. I think so. Because I don't think you'd been sent on it if it wasn't thought that you could convert. I think that some people didn't. I mean, there are some people who didn't get past class one or something because they were absolutely super on that, but was probably thought they wouldn't be any good with faster airplanes. Or perhaps they didn't want to. I mean, it could be your own wish if you didn't want to do it, I imagine.
Did you stay at Handball? The rest of your time.
Well, I finished when the war came to an end and Hamble, the ATA wound down, I think it finished probably October 45, and Hamble was one of the first pools to shut down. We were all sent to different places. I went up to Harden for 2 months before I finished with ATA altogether. And we were sent round to various places. There might have been a reason. I mean, one woman was married and her husband was prisoner of war, and so she left early. I mean, immediately he got back, she was out. If you had a reason, but as far as I was concerned, there was no pressing reason. And so we went on until the whole thing was wound down.
Could you tell me what sort of aircraft you were using at Hamble?
At Hamble? Well, I suppose it was the Spitfires more than anything, because Weasley, which was a maintenance... No, I think that they produced them there.
And where were you journeying to, generally?
I suppose... but difficult to know. I mean, again, if I have my logbook, I can see. South of Scotland, probably. But it could vary. I mean, every day could vary. But we seemed to go up to Harden an awful lot in Cheshire. I remember the Wrekin was always one's point of navigation. Not that one should have been there. I mean, we were obviously flying compass courses and things.
Were you ever required to go into Europe?
No. That happened after D-Day, after the invasion. I believe one or two girls did go into France, but we didn't. We really were British Isles. Went across to Northern Ireland a couple of times, and Isle of Man the odd time, but really not. British Isles, really.
What do you remember about D-Day?
Not much. And people tell me there was so much to see.
What were you doing?
Well, I was at Hamble, and we were flying around, and we must have seen it all, and it was there on the beaches and so on. But I can't... It's, in retrospect, it's... I think I had blinkers on. I mean, so much I didn't realise was going on, because I think one was terribly involved in oneself and what one was doing, one's immediate family. So I don't remember an awful lot about it, really. I seem not to remember an awful lot about an awful lot of things, so still.
Now, what sort of equipment did you take in the planes with you?
Parachute. Very important. And a bar of chocolate. We were always allowed emergency rations of this 2-ounce bar of chocolate. And an overnight bag, which was a squashy little thing with just your toothbrush, which you... If you thought you were going to be stuck out. I mean, sometimes you knew you'd be all right. So you wouldn't take anything. I mean, but the parachute, we always wore parachutes, obviously. Sat on them.
Did you find the uniform sufficient?
From the point of view of cold? No, I think I had an Irving jacket I used to wear over my uniform. No, it wasn't sufficient. One had... I had an Irving jacket and boots, and some people had ovals. No, it would have been too cold. But, of course, the more advanced, I mean, the faster the aeroplane, you could shut the hood and it would be quite warm, because the open cockpits were cold. So it wasn't so...
So how did you cope with that?
I didn't mind it then. I wouldn't like it now.
Do people generally prefer some types of aircraft over and above others?
Yes, I think so. And I think most people say the Spitfire was the one. I mean, it's absolutely... It was such a beautiful little aeroplane. It was gorgeous. It just did what you wanted. Super. And I liked a Barracuda, which people think is crazy, because that was a... That had everything added to it, but it was very nice to handle in the air. So, but Spits really were the thing. I love them.
What did girls generally find the most difficult to handle?
Well, I think the typhoon and the tempest, because they were vicious on landing, they could slew off to the left. I don't know. I don't think they did, really, anything particular. Because it wasn't... You didn't need strength. I mean, it wasn't a question of strength that you... I really don't think that there was anything that a man could fly, a woman could fly, that from point of view of strength, there was no difference there at all. It wasn't that difficult.
And how did you all cope with the lack of women's amenities at aerodromes?
Well, most, you see, there were WAF. And so they was usually somewhere, right? That was perfectly all right. It wasn't a problem. It was only in the aeroplane. But that never seemed to be a problem. We didn't have long flights. So, no, it wasn't a problem.
How well do you think you all work together?
At Hamble, very well indeed. It was tremendous. I mean, great, great spirit. The senior ones were very nice to us, and until we were called the young Amazons, because we're all pretty tall, apart from Monique and Peggy and Agatha. But no, they were very, very nice indeed. It was so much an individual thing. I mean, the fact we all lived in different cottages, and the fact we all had different sort of social lives and different backgrounds, it all sort of worked very well. I wouldn't have thought there was ever a problem. Very pleasant. Veronica, whom we mentioned, was very senior. She was flight captain. So she was a very experienced pilot. And Margot was a CEO. No, they were all very nice.
What were your flight hours once you were at the pool?
What, altogether? Or what?
Well, no.
How many hours had I got before I went there? I suppose about 100, maybe 200.
And how many hours were you flying per week, do you think?
Well, that's what I'm not sure of. I'd have to sort of check. I don't know. I mean, we were on duty, so to speak, for however many hours it was. If we only had short flights, having got there by 9, whatever it was, and we might get back by 1, then you're off the rest of the day, apart from a couple of standby pilots. But you might not get back until 9 if it was in the summer, because that was before it didn't get dark until... We had double summertime, didn't we, I think? So it was probably 11 when it got... But you might not get back till late. But if you hadn't anything to do, you... And weren't standby, you went home. Which was good.
How often did you have an overnight stop?
I suppose a couple of times a month, possibly. Just depends. I mean, you might get caught out because of the weather. You might have gone up somewhere and got an aeroplane back, but the weather clamps and you couldn't come back.
Did you ever have any accidents or...
No.
Difficult incidents or anything?
No. Nothing dramatic. No, I was lucky. I didn't. Near misses, possibly, but nothing dramatic. Nope.
What did all you girls do when you weren't flying?
Well,
I think we're coming to the end here.